Maxwell House Coffee presents Good News of 1938. The makers of Maxwell House Coffee invite you to be their Hollywood guest. So imagine yourself on stage 30 of the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios, where tonight our special visiting stars are Robert Montgomery and Virginia Bruce. Also present, but unaccounted for, is Una Merkel, and of course our regular gang, Frank Morgan, Fanny Bryce, Hanley Stafford, Gus Kahn, famous composer, Douglas MacPhail, Meredith Wilson, and your host, Robert Young.
Ted, good evening, everybody. This is Bob Young, starting the presses rolling with another edition of Good News of 1938.
Lord,
Frank, are you going to start with that opera singing again?
Again? Why, Bob, haven't you heard the good news?
Don't tell me you're expecting laryngitis.
Who is she? I mean, oh, no. I gargled this morning, and my voice is clear as bell.
Yeah, a little crack.
Sure I am. But what's the difference as long as I'm happy?
Bonne mobile.
Oh, Frank. Frank. Just quiet down a minute and tell me what this is all about.
Oh, well, Bob, great news. I've just been signed by the Metropolitan.
Signed by the Metropolitan?
Yeah.
Where will the recession hit next?
It's the truth, Bob. I'm definitely in. They've given me a $100,000 deal.
A $100,000 deal?
Yes.
Oh, I was wrong, Frank. You're not cracked. They are.
You're just jealous, Bob. You're one of those people who hate to see anyone get along in this world.
Now, wait a minute. How long is this contract for, Frank?
20 years, my skeptical young friend, or should I say filio?
Filio. 20 years. Yes. I can't believe it.
Well, neither can I. I mean, it's true, Bob. The man came to see me this morning, and I signed my name on the dotted line.
Well, who were you signed by, Edward Johnson?
No, this man's name was Wilbur Toot. He rang the bell this morning, and my wife let him in. As true as I'm standing here, he slipped the pen into my hand and said, Frank, sign, we want you with us.
Well, I can't believe it. Frank, that's sensational. $100,000 a year for life.
Yes, and double in case of accident.
What are you talking about, Frank?
Well, it says so right here in the contract. The Metropolitan Life Insurance Company agrees to pay.
The Metropolitan Life Insurance Company? So that's what made you so happy.
Well, why not? You'd be happy, too, if you passed the examination with my liver.
Oh, Meredith, play something, and please, no opera.
The Latin Quarter from the Gold Diggers in Paris. Not an opera.
Oh, this is Gail Curry. Come on along with me. We're stepping out to see the Latin Quarter. Put on your old beret and sing the Marseillaise and put our wine away like water. And are you in the mood to have some Latin food? And have you ever wooed the Latin daughter? Hooray for Lafayette, hooray for Gret Suzette. If you ain't at it yet, you order. Come on and parley.
Come on, 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 come on must say that the music department got off to a nice start tonight. Meredith, I'd say that the music department got off to a nice start tonight. And now, once again, Fanny Bryce brings her famed characterization of that incredible, daddy-tormenting, lovable brat, Baby Snooks. Tonight, there is a wonderful silence in the house. Snooks has been put to bed and is sleeping soundly, we hope. Daddy Snooks, played by Hanley Stafford, is trying to get a ticket to see the boxing matches. Let's listen to him on the phone.
Hello. Madison Square Garden? This is Higgins again. Did you get a seat for me? Good. I'll be there in about 15 minutes. Hold it for me. Goodbye. Now, if I can only sneak past her room.
Buddy.
Oh. Snooks, I thought you were sleeping.
Where are you going?
I'm in an awful hurry. I'm going to the fight.
What fight?
The Battle of the Century. There's a championship fight tonight, and I must be there in 10 minutes.
Is Mommy going?
No.
And who are you going to fight with?
I'm not going to fight with anybody. Now go back to bed.
I want to go with you, Daddy.
Don't be silly, Snooks. Little girls don't go to watch fights.
Why?
Because they don't. And I haven't any time to argue with you. Now go to sleep right away.
Well, tell me your story, Daddy.
No. Oh, all right. I'll tell you a story about Jack and Orion. Now my story's begun. I'll tell you another about Jackie's brother. Now my story's done. Good night.
Bye.
What do you want?
Where are you running?
I'm in a hurry to get to the garden.
What for?
I told you I'm going to see the big fight.
Who's fighting, Daddy?
Two men.
Are they mad at each other?
No, they don't even know each other.
Then what are they fighting for?
They get paid for it.
Who pays them?
The people who buy the tickets.
What tickets?
The tickets to the fight.
Which fight?
Any fight. Now, go to sleep and let me get out of here.
I don't want to.
Why not?
Because I want you to tell me a story.
I just told you a story.
Yeah, you tell me that story every week.
All right. I'll tell you another one. There was once a nice daddy who worked very hard in the office all day.
Mm-hmm.
And one night he wanted to go to the fight. And just as he was leaving, his little girl made him tell her a story.
Mm-hmm.
So he told her a story. Then he put on his hat like this, mm-hmm. and he gave his little girl a kiss like this. And off he went to the fight, and that's the end of the story.
That ain't the end, Daddy.
No? Well, what is the end?
The little girl wouldn't let him go.
Why not?
Because he didn't like the story.
Well, I'm going.
If you go, I'll hold my breath till I turn blue.
Snooks, don't do that.
Well, then don't go.
Oh, what's the use? I'll never make it anyhow. Give me that phone. Hello. Columbus 5000.
Who are you calling, Daddy?
I'm going to cap for my ticket. Hello, Madison Square Garden. This is Higgins again. Say, cancel that seat you're holding for me. I know I did, but I can't make it. Okay, thanks.
Ain't you going, Daddy?
No, you little devil.
Why?
Because you won't let me get out of here.
Yes, I will, Daddy.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. Ain't I a good little girl?
Oh, maybe I can still make it. Operator, get me Columbus 5000. Oh, you're a darling, Snooks.
Is I?
Yes. Oh, hello, Madison Square Garden. This is Higgins again. Will you hold that ticket for me? Yes, well, it's a peculiar situation. I'll be right down. Goodbye. Oh, you're a sweet child, Snooks.
Are you sweet, aren't I, Daddy?
Yes. And you're sure you don't mind if I leave?
When?
Right now. Now, what's the matter?
I want you to tell me a story, Frank.
What? Snooks, did you ever hear of an impossible devil of a child driving a man to insanity? Well, what are you laughing at?
I like that story.
Operator, Columbus 5000. Hello. Madison Square Garden, this is Higgins again. I'll have to cancel that ticket. I can't make it. No, I'm not crazy. I know what I'm doing.
Now, why did you stick the cigar in your ear?
Shut up. No, not you. Oh, there's a crowd of people here. My wife just fell down a flight of stairs, and I have to stay home and take care of her. Goodbye.
Oh, Daddy.
Well, what's the matter?
When I tell a fib, you give me your licking.
Well, I hope you're satisfied now. The fight's already started.
Is it?
Yes. You've ruined the only pleasure I'd have had for months. I was dying to see that pipe.
Then why didn't you go, Daddy?
Oh, Snooks, do you really mean it?
Uh-huh. Ain't I a good little girl?
And can I really go?
Yes, Daddy.
All right, I'm leaving.
As soon as you tell me your story.
All right. I'll tell you a story.
What are you getting that slipper for?
I'm going to need it for the story.
Daddy.
What?
I want to hear that story.
Well, you're going to hear it. Now, there was once a wicked, disobedient, naughty little girl.
Like me, Daddy?
Yes. And her daddy never wanted to spank her. But she provoked him so much he finally had to. So he turned her over like this, and he let her have it. He had to teach her to be a good girl, so he spanked her again.
Why are you spanking me?
It's the only way I can impress it on your mind.
That ain't where my mind is.
Right. Now you just go right to sleep, and I don't want to hear another sound out of you. You understand?
Uh-huh.
And now I'm going to see that fight whether you like it or not. Operator, Columbus, 5,000. Hello. Madison Square Garden, this is Higgins again. Can you get that ticket for me? Oh, yeah? Well, how would you like a punch in the nose? You hold that ticket. I'll be right down.
Have you got a ticket, Daddy?
Yes, and I'm leaving right now. Good night.
Hello? Operator? Get me Columbus 5,000. La, 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 la. Hello? Madison Square Garden? This is Higgins again. Cancel my ticket. I can't make it. Why? Because my daddy gave me a spanking.
Well, it kind of looks like Doug McPhail is going cowboy on us tonight. Right now, he's going to lasso his rich baritone voice around a verse and a couple of choruses, a new Western song titled Ride, Tenderfoot Ride. Rider, Doug.
Ride, Tenderfoot Ride tonight. See the old range riders there at your side tonight. They're fast company, so if you want to be a cowboy, then you gotta ride, Tenderfoot Ride. You gotta hit the trail in Oklahoma when the moon is pale. Get to Texas with the morning mail, or you can be a cowboy. You got a rope and a throw, you got to get your share of buffalo, and win the money at the rodeo, or you can be a cowboy. Oh, you got to tend your cattle the best you can, hold your liquor like a man, and ride. Tenderfoot Ride tonight. See the old range riders there at your side tonight. They're fast company, so if you want to be a cowboy, then you gotta ride Tenderfoot Ride. You gotta ride the range so the old man desert turns your heart away. You gotta ride the range through the night and the day. You gotta ride like a demon. The doggies always know. Unless you know your stuff, they will call your bluff and go. Oh, ride, Tenderfoot Ride tonight. If you want to be a cowboy, then you gotta ride Tenderfoot Ride on. Tenderfoot.
Doug, you're getting to be the nearest thing to a bass thrush that I've ever heard.
Thanks very much, Bob.
You bet.
Oh, hello, Bob.
Oh, look who's here.
Yes, Bob, it's me in the flesh. The lovely, glamorous star of conquest and Camille, Greta Garbo.
Garbo? Una, what's the idea of coming up here and saying you're Greta Garbo?
Well, if I'd have said I was Una Merkel, who would have applauded?
Well, let's not have any misunderstanding here, ladies and gentlemen. Much as this young lady sounds like Greta Garbo and looks like Greta Garbo, she's really Una Merkel.
No, that's awfully sweet of you to say, Bob. Hey, Bob. But you know, I wasn't even trying to sound like Greta just now. But I really can do a wonderful imitation of her. At least that's what all my friends tell me. And I have an Aunt Lucy in Richmond that every time I visit down there, well, there's just nothing that'll do but I must give my imitation of Greta Garbo. Would you like to hear it?
I don't like hay fever, but I got it.
You Yankees have such a backhanded way of coaxing people.
Yeah, but the Giants aren't doing so well either. But, oh, how did we get on the subject of baseball?
Baseball? Oh, I love baseball. You know, I don't think there's anything prettier than a long forward pass to second base.
Could I have a second helping of that, please?
Well, don't you think that's pretty? A long forward pass to second base?
Oh, I think it's just about the prettiest thing in baseball. Except maybe when the goalie skates up in the bleachers after a long fly. You know, who makes your straitjackets?
Oh, I don't like those tailored things. I think a girl should be feminine. Don't you like a feminine girl, Bob?
Oh, sure. Much better than the bearded lady.
What's that?
Nothing. I just yawn.
Oh, Bobby, is you Fifi?
Oh! Fifi? You know, there's nothing more exquisitely distasteful to me than baby talk.
Oh, why, Bob, I do that, too. Would you rather hear Greta Garbo or baby talk?
You know, are there any other names on the ballot?
No, you've got to choose Garbo or baby.
Ibbity, bibbity, sibbity, sam, ibbity, bibbity, Garbo.
Wouldn't you like to do two out of three?
Do the Garbo imitation.
Well, all right. Just close your eyes, Bob. Here goes.
They're closed.
Now, just picture me in a long, flowing, lacy negligee.
I got it. Go ahead.
Or would you rather picture me in a high bodice gown with a train?
I'll take the train. When does it leave?
Now, stop your fooling, Bob. How do you prefer to picture me?
Can I open my eyes?
Surely.
I'll take you in a raincoat with a bustle.
When I do it for my Aunt Lucy, I always wear my great-grandmother Kincaid's wedding dress. She had the first waltz with General Lee at the big ball the night before.
Yona, will you please do your broken-down Garbo imitation?
Oh, well, that's better. I've been waiting for you to ask me pretty. Now, just imagine Garbo all surrounded by lots and lots of people. And all of a sudden, she says in that quaint Swedish accent, I think I'll go home now. I want to be by myself.
That's the Garbo imitation.
Uh-huh.
Your grandmother danced with General Lee on account of that?
Uh-huh.
I see. It's a lucky thing you didn't do the baby talk or the Civil War would still be on.
Oh, I thank you, Bob. And speaking of the Civil War, that reminds me, where's Frank Morgan?
Don't tell me he was in that, too. What do you want with Morgan?
Well, I was talking to my editor. You know, I'm still connected with the magazine, Bob. And he wants me to write an article about Frank. I think it's sort of an expose, I imagine.
Oh, blowing the lid off Frank Morgan, eh?
No, they just want something about his operatic career.
Operatic career? Well, that big bluffer's never been near an opera house.
Well, he told me that when Madame Lucatelli made her American debut, he sang opposite her.
That's right. She sang at the Metropolitan, and he sang in a barbershop quartet across the street.
Oh, but Bob, what would Madame Lucatelli be doing in a barbershop?
Meredith, would you play something loud? Here's another of Meredith Wilson's songs you didn't expect to hear. And one reason we've chosen it, because it's a favorite of little Judy Garland, who was hurt the other day in a motor accident. But Judy's recovering fast, and we all hope she'll be back with us soon, and that she enjoys The Object of My Affection. Thank you. Well, Meredith, I hope Judy liked it as well as we did. And now, Ted Pearson, who has a word to say about Maxwell House Coffee. Ted?
Thank you, Bob. Friends, I was just talking to Doug McPhail here about hobbies. Doug tells me his favorite hobby is trout fishing and trying his skill on a big one. Is that right, Doug?
That's right, Ted.
Another thing Doug likes is a cup of Maxwell House coffee after a strenuous day on the set. Right again, Doug?
You bet. A couple of Maxwell House goes swell about then. But say, Ted.
Yeah?
A couple of weeks ago, my dad and I took a fishing trip up in the Sierras. You know, a day there sure whips up an appetite. At sundown, we built a fire, threw a couple of fish in the pan, and set a coffee pot in the coals. Boy, when that coffee sent up that aroma, wow.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like Maxwell House, Doug.
You bet. It's always great, but around the campfire, wow. Believe me, Maxwell House has that flavor and body a man likes.
That's right, Doug. Friends, indoors or out, afield or at home, Maxwell House is certainly a big favorite with most men because it is such grand coffee. Coffee with that smooth, mellow flavor, that rich, full-bodied goodness a man wants in his coffee cup every time. So, if I may talk to the wise for just a second or two, let me suggest that you get a pound of Maxwell House coffee tomorrow. Treat your husband and yourself to a great cup of coffee, Maxwell House, with that friendly stimulation that buoys you up and never lets you down.
In this next number, we had two ideas. One was to let Frank Morgan sing it, and the other was not to let Frank Morgan sing it. Meredith Wilson solved the problem by creating such a beautiful arrangement that even the great Morgan himself refused to take a chance on spoiling it. Listen to the grand job Meredith has done on Chloe.
Falling.
Ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow night all over the country, thousands of you will be attending the first showing of the great new MGM feature, Yellow Jack. It is a grand, human, dramatic story, superbly acted by a brilliant cast. And it's a pleasure to welcome two stars of Yellow Jack to our program this evening. They will recreate for us one scene from the picture. Mr. Robert Montgomery and Miss Virginia Bruce. Yellow Jack is a story of victory. Victory over the dread yellow fever, accomplished with the help of those brave volunteers of the United States Army who remained in Cuba at the conclusion of the Spanish-American War. In the picture, there's also a touching love story, that of the Irish sergeant, John O'Hara, played by our visiting star, Robert Montgomery. O'Hara is in love with a beautiful nurse, Frances Blake, played by Virginia Bruce. Miss Blake is deadly serious in her work. O'Hara is torn between loyalty to Major Reed and a desire to return to the United States. Thus far, he has not volunteered to the dangerous experiment which Reed is proposing, namely that soldiers allow themselves to be bitten by the suspected yellow fever mosquito. O'Hara has not volunteered, nor has anyone else. But possibly Frances Blake will be able to persuade him. She's with O'Hara now, the two sitting quietly near the shore of Santiago Bay, listening to music floating out from the city.
You didn't arrange for the music, did you, John?
No, ma'am. Or the moon, either. Both are a special dispensation of Providence, Miss Frances. Which only proves what I've always said, that heaven has its eye on O'Hara.
That's a very comforting thought.
It doesn't bother me a bit. You know, Miss Frances, without your uniform, you're very human.
That music's very effective.
The beauty of the music of Cuba, as you may have noticed, is that it never ends. Even though the night stops with the bugle sound and reveille, and a man wakes from his dreams to find the stars are gone. There's a thought in there somewhere.
Why did you switch to the medical corps, John?
I thought the work would be easy.
I don't believe that.
Well, since I know you feel the same way about the man, I did it to look after the Major.
Look after him?
And how right I was with him chasing around with his doctors, worrying after a ghost like a brace of bulldogs. Why do you ask?
It's that... There must be an ideal in the heart of a man who sets out to work for the good of his fellow men instead of their destruction.
My ideal is to keep my natural sense of humor in the line of fire or come what may.
Did you intend to stay on in the army, John?
Until 5 seconds ago, that was my greatest wish.
I'm talking to Sergeant O'Hara now. Sergeant O'Hara, who wants to stay on in the army. Drill. Maybe 10-20 years of drill. Then another war and more lives thrown away. Then drill again. Then a pension. In the old soldier's home. If that's all being a soldier comes to.
Well, it ain't much.
Now, maybe for the first time since armies began, soldiers are given a chance to do good, not harm. To make the world better, not worse, is a place to live in.
I don't follow you, Miss Frances.
I cannot understand with all these men why no one has come forward for Major Reed.
You can't understand why a man doesn't care to risk his life taking yellow fever of his own free will.
Won't the Major get a single volunteer?
I wouldn't know, Miss Frances.
I want him to get one. I thought of talking to some of the boys myself.
Ah, that's bad. Don't use your sex to shame them into it.
Major Reed said tonight, if one, only one of our boys will step forward, he'll touch the heart of the world and the world will weep and have faith in this. He'll give the army a new kind of hero, Major said.
Did he say that?
Oh, no, John. I could have cried to see him so helpless. His face gray at the edge of his great discovery, unable to move.
And what did you say to him, Miss Blake?
What?
Didn't you say, leave it to me, Major? I know the very man to volunteer. I know the very man for us, and maybe three or four more if I can get him. And I can't get him like nothing at all. I'll lead him back with a ring in his nose.
No, no, I thought if I could only...
Or are you trying to tell me that you suddenly realized what a beautiful man John O'Hara was and you couldn't do without him?
Don't let your vanity get the best of
you. My vanity may be so, but what a fine, rotten trick to bait a man on. If you'd asked me straight out, I might have done it, silly as it is.
I had to do something.
I want none of your apologies, Miss Blake, and no explanations. You had a fine opinion of John O'Hara, didn't you, to think of such a thing? I'm sorry I ever bothered you, and I won't again.
Ladies and gentlemen, we haven't time to give you any more of the story of Yellow Jack, but I think this scene suggests some of the interesting complications of the picture. Mr. Montgomery, thanks for a swell performance both here and in the picture.
Thank you, Bob.
And Miss Bruce, the same to you. But I don't need to tell you how much I admire your work.
Why, Bob, it's always nice to hear compliments.
Well, we get together sometime. Anyway, thanks to both of you for coming up. Ted, it's time for that pleasant Thursday night custom of ours. A moment of relaxation over a steaming cup of Maxwell House coffee.
Yes, sir, right you are, Bob. But first, I'd like to remind the folks why we packed this superb blend in that familiar blue super vacuum can. Well, you see, when ground coffee is packed so the air can get at it, its flavor fades just as my voice is fading right now.
Hey, Ted, come back here. Your voice is almost faded out.
Well, I did that to show how the flavor and body of coffee fades when it's packed in ordinary containers. You see, all coffee, whether ground or in the whole bean, starts losing flavor after roasting. And you know, ground coffee, when packed in ordinary containers where the air can reach it, loses as much as 45% of its flavor in only 9 days. Yes, almost half its flavor is lost. Now you have the reason why we pack Maxwell House coffee in that airtight super vacuum can. So this loss of flavor can't happen to Maxwell House. From the hour it leaves the roasting ovens, all the full flavor, all the rich body of Maxwell House coffee is sealed in. Brought to you roaster fresh.
And it's a cup of that same full-flavored, full-bodied coffee that we're inviting you all to have with us right now. So, Meredith, let's have some of that flavorful music of yours to go with a cup of this coffee that buoys you up and never lets you down.
We now pause briefly for station identification.
You're listening to KFI Los Angeles. This is Bob Young again, and we continue good news with a lot of dynamite still to come. Gus Kahn, more of Una Merkel and Frank Morgan, Fanny Bryce singing in Meredith Wilson's concert hall. Meredith leads at the halfway post with a little number that seems to be tickling the feet of most of the jitterbugs around the country. After you.
Thank you.
now, friends of Maxwell House, here's a fellow who writes songs. He is probably one of the most talented in all this yah entertainment business, being responsible for such terrific hits as, well, just to mention a few, Chloe, the number Meredith just played, I Never Knew, I'll See You in My Dreams, Whoopee, Yes Sir, That's My Baby, Carioca, My Buddy, and most recently the songs in the Nelson Eddy Jeanette McDonald opus, The Girl of the Golden West, the poet laureate of the MGM lot, America's premier lyricist, Mr. Gus Kahn.
Thank you, everybody. And Bob, the way you whip those adjectives around, you should be in the songwriting racket yourself.
Not me. About the best I can do is Moon, Spoon, and June. Which reminds me, Gus, how many of those Mooners, Spooners, and Juners do you figure you've dreamed up?
I should say in the neighborhood of 700 or 800.
Wow, some neighborhood.
There's one thing I want kept straight, Bob. That I was only the lyric writer of these songs. The melodies were written by a few boys who really know their way around Tin Pan Alley. Vincent Humans, Harry Warren, Ted Fiorito, Rudolph Frimmel, Walter Donaldson, and Sigmund Rumberg.
That reminds me, Gus, something I've often wondered about songwriting. Which comes first, the melody or the lyric?
I was waiting for that, Bob. Well, there's no set rule. The fellow who writes the words comes along with a good idea. The composer can usually fit a tune to it, or vice versa. It's like the chicken and the egg. Most of the time, even the writers don't know which came first.
Gus, is it true you have to be just a little goofy to be a songwriter?
Well, you don't have to be, but it certainly is a big help.
Like pictures. Exactly what do you mean by that, Gus?
Well, for example, once when I was doing some songs for a show with George Gershwin, I phoned him and said, George, I've got a terrific lyric idea. He said, well, I've just finished a tremendous tune. Maybe we can write a colossal song. Come right over.
So what happened?
When we got together, I discovered the title he had was Starlight Serenade. And the title I had was When the Apple Blossoms Bloom in Oregon.
What did you finally call the song?
Liza.
Oh, ho! Gus, what was your first big song hit?
Well, I fooled around with a lot of them, but I think the first one that really clicked in a big way that you may remember was a little tune that went something like this. You're nobody's sweetheart now. Thanks, Meredith. They don't baby you somehow.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Oh, Frank, that applause wasn't for you. It was for Gus Kahn here. You know Gus, don't you?
Gus Kahn, do I know him? Do I know him? Who is he, Bob?
Frank, Gus Kahn is one of the foremost lyric writers.
Oh, a songwriter. Well, Mr. Kahn, you're just the man I'm looking for.
Oh, here it comes.
Well, Mr. Kahn, of course, you know I'm quite a musician.
I've heard you sing.
Yes, well, don't jump at conclusions. I'm really very musical, and Mr. Kahn, I can use a man like you.
I'll be glad to be of assistance if I can.
Well, you see, I've just written what I modestly consider one of my greatest melodies, but I need a lyric.
Now, don't tell me that Morgan, the mental giant, can't write a simple little lyric.
Well, I could, but the lyric to this number isn't very important, so I thought I might as well let Kahn here do it.
Don't be so generous, Frank.
Well, just wait till you hear this medley, gentlemen. I consider it the finest of my many sensational scores, and that's one man's opinion.
What is the score? What is the score, Mr. Morgan?
7-2 in favor of the Yankees. Oh, the musical score. Well, it will positively revolutionize the music business. Publishers will pay thousands for just the verse.
What about the chorus?
Well, there was one little blonde, third from the end, cute as a restless ear.
Oh, Frank, Gus is talking about the chorus of your song.
Oh, well, all right, if you insist on switching the conversation. What about the chorus of my song?
Is it any good?
Who wrote it?
You did.
Oh, of course, my song. Well, it's sort of a subdued tone poem, a musical fantasy that captures the mood of the old Sooth. The Mississippi lapping gently against the levees. Old Man River rolling, rolling along. Lift that bale, tote that bar.
Wait a minute.
Get yourself glad to get enough. What? Well, you see how I'm carried away by music.
Yeah, you're carried away, but not far enough. Now, what about this beautiful tone poem, this tender southern musical fantasy?
Well, you fellas love it. Now, just listen.
Yes, Frank, that's really the old, old South.
Yeah, well, I thought you'd like it.
So that's your own original melody, eh, Mr. Morgan?
Well, of course. Who else could breathe into a melody the spirit of the old plantation with its cone, pone, and pride picking in it?
You sure? You're sure it was inspired by the old South?
Certainly so.
You haven't got any old phonograph records around the house, have you, Mr. Morgan?
Well, Mr. Conn, if you're trying to insult me, let me tell you it's impossible. Are you insinuating my melody isn't entirely original?
We're not insinuating anything. We're telling you that the melody you're humming is one of Mr.
Just a minute, Bob. Listen, Mr. Conn. I mean, Mr. Morgan. See, I'm talking to myself. Well, you're Mr. Morgan.
I'm
Mr. Conn.
Oh, you're Bob Conn.
I really think you've got something there, and I'd like to write the words for that tune. Do you mind giving it to me again?
Well, it kind of gets you, doesn't it? Dee-dee-dee-da-da.
How's this for a title?
Yeah.
You're Nobody's Sweetheart Now.
You're Nobody's Sweetheart Now. Well, maybe. Of course, to give it the real Southern atmosphere, you'd have to change it to Your Nobody's Sweetheart Now, Honey Child.
Nice suggesting, Frank.
Just a second. I think I've got the start of the words, Mr. Morgan. How's this? You're nobody's sweetheart now. They don't baby you somehow.
No, that doesn't quite fit it. Bob, where'd you find this fellow? I could write better lyrics with my fingers crossed. Now, listen to this. Yes, sir, that's my baby now. Yes, sir, that's my baby now. Yes, sirree, yes, sirree, yes, sirree. That's my... You hear me screaming.
This is right. Right.
What?
If you must know, Mr. Conn wrote a song called Nobody's Sweetheart. It was a big hit, published over 20 years ago, and the melody to it is exactly the same one you're trying to tell us that you wrote.
Of course it's... What? What did you say?
I'm telling you, that's Gus Kahn's song.
Well, that's a fine thing. I just meet the man and already stole my song. It's treason, sabotage. Just wait till the Humane Society hears about this. I've been stabbed.
You know something, Bob? Maybe he did write that song.
Oh, so he's got you going, too, huh? Well, Gus, it's been darn nice of you to drop around and bandy words with us. And before you go, we'd like to play a number of yours that I understand is kind of close to your heart.
My buddy?
That's right.
Thanks, Bob.
Meredith, if we didn't have that man with a stopwatch here, I'd insist that you do an encore. That was really a thing.
Thank you, Bob.
Oh, Bob.
Oh, what is it, Una?
Well, I want to ask you something very confidential.
Uh-huh.
I'm in deep trouble.
Well, you've come to the right place, Una. Tell it to old Dr. Young.
It's about Meredith Wilson.
Meredith Wilson? You mean the band leader that's half man, half hat?
Yes, Bob, that charming Southern boy.
Oh, the Colonel, yes.
Oh, well, you needn't joke about it, Bob. It means an awful lot to me. You see, I looked up Meredith in the First Families of Virginia, and he's not listed.
Meredith's not an FFV? Well, part my hair with a hog leg. Well, let's ask the colonel himself. Hey, Meredith, come here a minute.
Okay, Robert.
Hello, Meredith.
Oh, evening, Miss Una.
Here we go. Meredith, is it true what they say about Dixie?
Oh, now you stop teasing, Bob Young. Meredith, I love that new suit you're wearing tonight.
I think it's charming, too. Cost me $19.50.
I think he walked up 12 flights to get it. Meredith, Una wants to know if your grandfather's an FFD.
Well, not at the moment. Right now, he's with the WPA. Timekeeper.
Meredith.
Did I say something wrong?
Oh, no. Listen, Meredith. Una's going to interview Frank Morgan now. You go out and learn the alphabet, a letter at a time.
Oh, gee whiz. I don't know what's going on here. I'm going to stand around.
Well, all right, Una. I'm ready for you. Got your book and pencil ready?
Oh, yes, the article. Poor Meredith.
Well, Una, 'tis better to have loved than lost.
Oh, yes, much better. What? Oh, let's get on with the interview. The first thing we need is a superb title. Well begun is half done, or as the witty French say, honest walking Molly Ponce.
Those French certainly are witty, aren't they?
Oh, I think so, too.
Yes, now here's a good title for your little essay. It came to me in a moment of clairvoyancy.
What is it, Frank?
We'll call it Swashbustling Frank Morgan. The world's greatest actor. How do you like it?
I think it sounds a little coy.
Well, I think it's perfectly wonderful, but how do you spell a swashbuckling?
Well, you can just change that to nifty. Now, my idea is to divide the Morgan of this article into three sections.
I'll take a leg.
Gravy?
Yes.
I mean, you stay out. You see, there were three important stages in the development of the man Morgan, so let's begin with a section called Morgan the Beautiful Infant. When it was only 3 weeks old, Rembrandt made a special trip to America to paint my portrait.
Oh, how thrilling. You think you could get him to paint mine?
Listen, Hector MacArthur, Rembrandt has been dead for 250 years.
Yes, well, I'm not surprised. I thought he looked a little seedy at the time.
You know, that reminds me, have you ever seen any of Meredith's baby pictures?
Oh, yes, hairy little devil, wasn't he?
Why, Frank. I'll bet he was cute.
Well, if you could call a coconut cute.
Oh, you're all just trying to make me feel bad.
Oh, no, he was cunning enough in a hideous sort of a way. A little on the backward side, too.
Now, Frank Morgan, don't you stand there and tell me that Diffie Wilson wasn't a bright baby.
Possibly. I shouldn't have said backward, but I do know that he was 14 years old before he learned to wave bye-bye.
Well, of course, if you'd like to see a picture of a bright boy at the age of 9, here's one of Bob Young that I always carry with me.
Oh, Bob, that's cute. Look at those two front teeth missing.
Yeah, I shifted gears on a lollipop.
Now, wait a minute. Whose autobiography are we writing? We pass now to the next stage of development, the fascinating topic, Morgan the Schoolboy Prodigy. Now, just make some notes, Una.
Yes, thanks.
Yes, I don't remember much about my early kindergarten days, except that we had a beautiful blonde teacher. Oh, yes, I learned a lot from her. Too bad we were both expelled.
Well, do you want me to put that in the article, Frank?
No, my real intellectual triumphs began when I entered Columbia University at the age of 7.
Hey, are you going to tell people you were 7 years old when you went to college?
I know it's bad, Bob, but I lost a year with measles.
Oh, well, I think it's wonderful anyway, Frank. Did you do well in college?
Well, I was the marvel of the professors, Una. I memorized whole textbooks with a single reading. I learned all of history in a week, mastered all languages in a month, reached through algebra, geometry, the differential calculus. All of mathematics was my dish.
Frank, how much is 7 times 7?
56. You can't catch me.
See, I'll bet I couldn't have been able to answer so quick.
No, I imagine not. Listen, Frank, as one of your devoted fans, I'm a little tired of Morgan the infant prodigy. What about Morgan the devoted husband?
Ah, Bob, now that's the best section of all. Have you ever seen a more thoughtful husband than Frank Morgan? You know, I always help my wife from her carriage. When she faints, I always get her the smelling salts. When we go through a revolving door, I do more than my share of the pushing. Why, I'm even nice to her family.
Oh, do you remember anniversaries, Frank?
Certainly. She always reminds me a week in advance. Honestly, Una, Alma and I are considered a model couple.
Hello? Oh, it's for you.
Oh, thanks. Hello. Fifi, ixnay, baby. Where are you now? In the drugstore across the alley. I'll be right over. But when I walk in, pretend you don't know me. So long. Well, Bob, Una, I'll see you later. I've got to go to the dentist.
It isn't very often Fanny Bryce sings a song on this Maxwell House program, When she does, it's usually something. Tonight, she sings one of the songs that made the name Fanny Bryce a byword in the minds of the thousands who thronged Broadway to see her in the days when Broadway was really the Great White Way. The song, I Was a Floradora Baby. Take it, Fanny.
Years ago, a musical show was at IS on Broadway. 20 years ago, I joined that show, and look at me today. 6 little happy little showgirls be, everyone a Broadway pet. 5 of them married in society, and I'm in the chorus yet. A disgrace to the whole sex set. For I was a Floradora baby with a chance to pick the best. I had to marry up with A.B., a drummer with a fancy vest. A girl's a fool, the fool with millionaires, said he. I should be his title dog. Now at home, I'm bringing off a sextet. 5 I got, the other one I'll get yet. 5 dumb fools got married for money. And I got married.
You know, they say everything happens for the best. And I was the best. You think not? Those millionaires would stand by their platinum limousines hoping for me to jump in. But with a flounce and a bounce and a jounce, I was off like a flash in the Flatbush Avenue streetcar. No millionaires for me. I married for romance. And do you think I'm sorry I gave up those limousines and diamonds? You think I'm sorry I'm washing dishes for every day for 8 people? You think I'm sorry we live in a 2-room flat? You think I'm sorry I didn't marry a millionaire? You bet your life I am. 5 dumb fools got married for money. And I got married for love.
Oh, that was grand, Fanny. Thank you very much. And now a word from Ted Pearson.
Friends, tonight I'd like to have you hear a letter from a woman who was here in our audience last Thursday. She's Mrs. Edward Sinclair of Tamarack Street, Carlsbad, California. This is what Mrs. Sinclair says.
Just a note to tell you how much my husband and I enjoyed the Good News program last week. Oh, we had a grand time. But here's what you'll really be interested in. Driving home afterwards, my husband said, "Say, Helen, that was a pretty convincing thing Robert Young told. I mean, about how he detected instantly the change to Maxwell House coffee in his favorite restaurant. Why don't we try Maxwell House at home?" Well, Friday morning I bought a pound of Maxwell House. And I just want to say it certainly does make a difference. And you're certainly right, too, about getting compliments from the men when you serve Maxwell House coffee. At least I never saw my husband so interested in his cup of coffee before. Thanks again, and good luck to Maxwell House.
And right there's a real hint for every woman listening. If your husband's been a bit half-hearted about his coffee, if he's left his morning cup half-finished lately, why don't you change to Maxwell House? Then see if he, too, doesn't relish the smoother, mellower flavor, the roaster-rich, full-bodied goodness of Maxwell House coffee. And this is important, to make sure you get all this every time, no matter how you make your coffee. We offer you Maxwell House in a choice of 2 grinds. The special drip grind Maxwell House for all drip and glass coffee makers, and the regular grind for percolator or boiled coffee. And remember, you can get Maxwell House in 1 and 2 pound cans. And if you use lots of coffee, you'll find it thrifty to buy the 2 pound size. So start serving Maxwell House tomorrow. See if you both don't get more real pleasure, more deep down satisfaction in a cup of this coffee that's truly good to the last drop.
As you faithful listeners to GN of 3-8 know, last week Meredith concluded his second concert hall series of the most beloved melodies in their respective fields. Before embarking on a new series, we felt that it might be fitting to do an encore to the last series. Meredith has chosen for the concert hall tonight one of the world's most beloved encores, Fritz Kreisler's Liebesfreud. Ladies and gentlemen,
oh, say, Bob,
we're going to have... What is it, Meredith?
I've just thought of something I've got to tell you. I've made up the funniest thing you ever heard in your life.
Well, I'd be surprised. Listen, Meredith, wait till I get through telling about next week's bill, and I'll be right with you.
Okay. You don't know what you're missing, Bob.
Yeah, that's good. Well, anyway, next week we're going to have one of the grandest shows we've had yet. In our MGM Theater of the Air, we will present Bob Taylor, Margaret Sullivan, Franco Tone, and yours truly in Three Comrades, based on the story by Eric Maria Remarque, who wrote All Quiet on the Western Front. Three Comrades is one of the really important motion pictures of the year. In addition, we'll have with us Fanny Bryce and Hanley Stafford, Frank Morgan and Douglas McPhail. Meredith Wilson will also be here, but don't talk yet, Meredith.
Okay, Bob.
I know you don't want to miss this great show, so remember that your ticket of admission is just your loyalty to Maxwell House Coffee. And plan to be with us next Thursday. In the meantime, go to the movies and take the family with you. This is Bob Young saying goodnight. Until next Thursday.
Now, Bob?
Wait just a second, please. Have you got something on your mind, Ted?
Yes, I just wanted to say that the number Ride Tenderfoot Ride is from a cowboy from Brooklyn. This is Ted Pearson saying goodnight and good luck for the makers of Maxwell House, the coffee that's always good to the last drop.
Now, Bob?
Now. What is it?
Well, I want everybody to hear it. Frank, Una.
Yes, Meredith. What is it, Meredith?
Well, I've made up a joke that has Bob Young's name in it and Una's and Frank's. Isn't that wonderful?
Well, I'll tell you in a minute. Let's hear the joke.
Well, all right. Here it is. It's a song title. When you and I were young, Morgie.
How did you like it?
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
This is KFI Los Angeles. For correct time, all the time, wear a bolivar.